Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, a show where each time we visit with veterans of World War II, the idea to honor them for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. Boy, are we in for one today in terms of going through things we can't even imagine. And of course, we also, along the way, are educated and inspired as we listen to people that if you saw them walking down the street, you might not have any idea what they've been through. That's certainly the case today. His hometown now is Cayucas. Originally, he's from Paso Robles, California. Carl Heuser, our guest, 91 years old now. But let's go way back when you were just the little kid running around Paso Robles, the son of the Lutheran minister. What was life like in Paso? A little different than now, I suppose.
Very plain, very comfortable, nothing out of the ordinary, just run-of-the-mill.
All of our cities in Central California have undergone some transformation over the years, but Paso Robles now, the first thing people think are all the glittering wineries along the road. None of those were there then, huh?
When I left Paso Robles, the population was about 7,500. It had been that way for years, and I was active as I was at the bank there, and I was active in the Red Cross and the city and so forth. In fact, I was treasurer of the Red Cross for a long time over there. But it was just a plain, ordinary little town.
So you've seen the changes, and you were part of getting the Warbirds Museum there going, a founding member of that museum. The air show's coming up October 5th for those of you who want to see a P-51 and some other great vintage airplanes up in the sky. What was the moment for you that the idea of flying grabbed a hold of you? Because I can tell just walking into your room here and seeing all the posters of great airplanes on the wall that you love flying.
I had a dream of flying. One day there was an outfit that came to Sherwood Field, the observation group, and one of their sergeants was a member who came to our church. And one day he called me up at work and he says, "Can you come out here in your lunch hour?" I said, "Yeah." And he says, "What do you got?" I said, "I got something to show you." So I went out there, and he put me in his Jeep and took me out to a P-40. The first combat or anything close to a combat plane that I had ever seen. He let me sit in the cockpit, and the smell and the feel, and it's just, I said, "This is what I got to do." That's why I decided right then that I was going to go into, when the time came, I was going to go into pilot training.
How old were you at that time?
I was 21, just barely 21. I had to get my parents' approval to enlist in the Air Corps, which I enlisted in Santa Maria as an aviation cadet.
Every veteran that I interview, I ask about December 7th because everybody seems to have some specific memory of that day and how that news came through. So how did you find out that the Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor?
As I said, my father was a pastor, and we always had several soldiers because they were already coming to Camp Roberts. But we had several soldiers at our house for dinner after church listening to the radio. And we were sitting at the table having dinner, and the radio came on. It's special. And it announced it. That Pearl Harbor had been attacked. Forgive me, but my brother-in-law was there. He was a major in the artillery, and he got up and he says, "Gentlemen, let's go." Took him back to the base. I'll never forget that because it was so. It just hit everybody this different way, but it just hit home. Boom! They've attacked us. We had never had that before.
The reason that I ask everyone that question is because everyone has a memory, and I haven't heard that twist on it. I mean, that, if anything, makes it real for you. It's to see military men in the same room you're in and seeing what they have to do. Did you have an inkling, even at that age, that you probably would be in the military at some point?
Because of my age, I knew I would be. I was subject to the draft. So I had, if you enlisted in something like I was going to, then they wouldn't call you, but you had to be enlisted. So that was August of 42, just 8 months after the Pearl Harbor, that I enlisted in the Army Air Corps. Went down to Santa Maria and enlisted. Had to get my folks to approve, and they didn't want to approve, but my mom finally says, "This is what he wants to let it do."
I'm guessing that you did that, enlisted in the Army Air Corps, because you weren't thinking, "Hey, I'm going to be a tail gunner." You were thinking, "Hey, I'm going to be a pilot."
I saw those poor guys out at Camp Roberts doing all that marching. And Camp Roberts, it was hot during hell out there at Camp Roberts, and they were doing this, and I says, "That's not for me." So I want to make sure I didn't get into the in the infantry. So that's another reason I wanted to enlist. But you know, the strange part about that is that after I was a prisoner of war, at the end of my term, we walked for 3 months. We walked over 500 miles around Germany. So I had plenty of walking time.
Yeah, we're going to get to that German Death March, as it's been called, for those of you who were at Stalag Luft 4. First, we got to get the rest of the story of what you did in the Air Corps, how you got shot down to begin with. How far did you make it in terms of your dream of becoming a pilot at that point?
Shipped out to Thunderbird outside of Scottsdale. And there we flew the PT-17, the Sturman biplane, PT, the primary trainer. I finished there. I was a hot pilot. And they sent us to Minterfield at Shafter over by Bakersfield. And there we flew the BT-13, the Vicious Vulti Vibrator, we called it. And I just sold it, and I had about 12 hours. And one morning, our instructor, we always had to meet with our instructor, he says, Hacker and Heuser, report to cadet headquarters. And I said, what for? He says, report to cadet headquarters. So I reported to headquarters, and I said, what am I doing here? The sergeant says, come follow me. I went into a room, and there was a desk of officers, and they said, you're being eliminated, and that's all. And I said, why? Don't ask any questions. Just answer our questions. Have you been treated fairly here? No. You have three choices. You also qualified to go to Bombardier School. So you can go to Bombardier School. Number two, you can go home, give up your enlistment, and go home and be subject to the draft. Or you can do what we want you to do. We can go to a gunnery school. So I said, I'll go to gunnery school. So that's how I got started. So then I went to Las Vegas Army Air Base for gunnery school, which was fun. I mean, that was thrilling. It was a lot of fun. I went home, and I came back and went to South Carolina, was assigned to this group that I was assigned to. So we flew overseas and landed up with the 410th Bomb Group at close to Chelmsford in England.
When they called you in at Minter and gave you that news, was that hard for you to swallow? Was that a tough one for you emotionally?
That was really tough because I really wanted to be a pilot. That was, you know, in the Army, you don't question it. You just, they say, yes, sir, no, sir. You just take it the way that it comes in. And that was, you know, I was not a very mature kid. I was just a youngster. I had to take it just the way it came. I was not very unhappy with it. I didn't cry about it, but I was very unhappy because I really wanted to be a pilot. And I knew I could fly. I knew I was a good pilot. So then we went to England. I flew 10 and a half missions.
Well, and the planes that you flew them in, I thought I had talked to someone from at least every plane that our military had, but I don't think I've ever interviewed someone who was in an A-20 on actual combat missions, and some people just said A-20. Now, what is he talking about, an A-20? So why don't you first explain to us what an A-20 is, and then what your duties on the A-20 were.
The A-20 was designed first by Douglas. It was built by Douglas. It was first designed as a dive bomber, and its first designation was DB-7. Dive Bomber 7. It was built for that purpose. However, when the first A-20s were shipped to France, really, and then when France was occupied, then they sent them to Britain, and the Britain called it the Havoc. We call it that. They call it the Boston. They had a number of them. In fact, a bit of trivia. The very first all-American bomber flight over Europe was made by A-20s. British A-20s, but flown by American crews and flew over an airfield in the Netherlands. And that was on July the 4th, 42. And the A-20 was a fast twin-engine light bomber. We carried 400 or 500-pound bombs. Later, they modified and they could carry two more 500-pounders under the wings. But it was really not a major threat. It could be used to fit in where the big planes couldn't do it, or the little ones, it could fit in. So it was sort of a useful plane for that reason.
As far as your role on the plane, I'm looking at the model of an A-20. In fact, even with your nose markings, Mopsy, up there, and I only see one gun turret that is about 2/3 of the way back on the airplane. Is that where you were?
That was my position. I was in the turret, what they call the belly, the opening in the bottom of the plane. The gunner that was down there, he had one single caliber 50 that he could swing into place and use. But normally he was taking pictures, and he would wear his flak suit. And he was, in fact, when we got shot up, that's what saved his life, was the flak suit. And the camera was just blown out of his hand. So he and I bailed out together. The whole empennage, I've got pictures of the whole empennage of our airplane was shot off by the German aircraft. The pictures right out of the center of the squadron.
Yeah, and any of these pictures that are relevant, we'll put online on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. That one sounds like a spectacular one. Can't wait to see it. So the A-20, how many men would have been in that crew?
The A-20 carried a crew of three. The pilot, he was all by himself up front. The pilot in the A-20 did everything. He was a radio man. He was a bombardier. He was a gunner. He did everything he had to do. And he was sitting out there in front of the props, and our plane was shot down. He didn't have a chance to get out. He was killed when the plane crashed. And the bottom guy was, like I said, was a photographer, and I was in the turret, and I was just looking for airplanes. Never did fire a shot. Never fired a shot.
And, you know, I've talked to a lot of guys on a lot of bomber crews, but most of those guys are on B-17s or B-24s or B-29s, and a lot bigger crews than just three. Do I assume that since you were such a small crew, that you guys were pretty close to each other, or did you bounce around from different pilots?
No, we flew with the same crew always. The pilots sort of kept to themselves, and as good as we kept ourselves. We didn't associate with them socially at all. We were a tight crew. I mean, we sometimes we'd eat at the mess together. Before we went overseas, our pilot that we had, we were down in Oklahoma, he invited his wife. His wife was a 4-4 Caddo Indian, and she cooked dinner for us, and we had dinner with him.
Did he have the honor of naming your plane Mopsy, or had that happened before you guys got it?
The plane was honored Mopsy because of the three letters that designated our airplane. Yeah. Like the 5D, that's the squadron. Yeah. And then every airplane then had a difference. Ours was M. And the crew chief, that he named it Mopsy. So it was his airplane, because we never knew which airplane we were going to fly, usually. Sometimes we did, but sometimes we didn't.
That was the one you guys were shot down in, but not the one you flew for all your missions. Tell me about your first mission. When you get up in an A-20 for the first time and you see things that you've probably never seen before, what was that first mission like for you?
That's a good question, because it was, as we first arrived at the group, we were new, and we would talk to the guys over there, and they say, what's it like? They look at it and say, we can't tell you. You have to experience it. We can't tell you what it's like. And so when we I remember the first mission that we went on, we were flying the last plane in this squadron, and we were shot up pretty bad. We had over 30 holes in the plane all around. My parachute just got blown out, but we were shot up pretty bad. So then I said, when we got back, they said, now do you know what it's like? Yeah, I got a pretty good idea. You're sitting up there, and you're looking around, and you don't see anything. And then all of a sudden, you hear the bombs. You feel the plane jerk when the bombs go away, and you turn around, and you turn around and go home. We had a fast airplane. We would go to the target at about 280, 270. When they turned around and started going home with them, it was more like 320. Just put the nose in, let's go home. And like I said, I never saw an enemy airplane to shoot at, and I never fired a round of ammunition. Other than practice, we'd go out and shoot at that thing on the ground. But otherwise, I never shot at an airplane.
You fly 10 missions as a gunner on this three-man crew of an A-20 at the 410th Bomb Group. And then they need volunteers for a mission. How did this 11th mission come around? What were you supposed to be doing that day?
Every day they had what they called the loading list. That was the crews that were supposed to be flying the next mission. Our crew was not on the loading list, but some guy comes tearing back in the Jeep and says, hey, we need a volunteer. Need a turret gunner. I said, I'll go. I was bound and determined to get as much done as I could so I could get the hell home as fast as I could. We had to fly, our airplane had to fly 65 missions before we were able to go home. None of our guys ever made that many. I mean, they made them, but they never got to go home. By the way, like the heavies, the B-20s, these 24s and the B-17s, they flew 25 missions, and then they could go home. And a lot of those guys did, like the Memphis Belle, you've heard about, they went home. We didn't have any guys leaving or going home.
So you're trying to get as many missions as you can, as soon as you can. So you volunteer, but then you're flying with a pilot you've never flown before?
I never flew with him before. And I knew the gunner because we sit across the table I knew who he was, but I didn't really know him that well because he was a separate crew. So when I volunteered, he and I spent some time together. In fact, after the war, we saw each other quite a bit, you know, at the various reunions and whatnot. But he and I bailed out. But funny thing, when he bailed out, we were at about 10,500 feet when the ship got hit up. The whole empennage, I mean, the whole tail end was showing. It's just a great big hole there. And here we are. And I had to get out of my turret, unbuckle myself, and put on my chute on my harness and get out. And he had already gone out. And I went out, and I was tumbling. And it's the first time. And you never know. You can't imagine what it's like. You're just tumbling. You can't see hell or high water. And all of a sudden, I said, that's not good. So I spread-eagled myself, and I started falling. I could see the ground, and I could see the sky. And I'm looking around, and where in the hell is Herman? And finally, I opened my parachute. I said, this is enough. I'll open my parachute. He was way up. He pulled his parachute as soon as he got out of the airplane. But they had told us to delay opening your chute as long as you're safe, as long as you feel safe, because the better chance you have of escaping capture, the less time you spend in the sky. So anyhow, but that was quite an experience. When that chute opens, it really tears. You really stop. You're flying at about terminal velocity at about 125 miles an hour, and that slows you down to about 20 miles an hour. I mean, it really jerks. It's hard.
Well, I imagine so, physically and emotionally. We definitely need to explore that moment a little more before we get to your capture, your time as a POW, your surviving the death march. But right now, it's time for a break. 91-year-old Carl Heuser of Cayucas, California is our guest today. We'll get the rest of his story when we come back. And hey, if you're looking for something to do this weekend and you really enjoy patriotic music, the Sounds of Freedom Band. Great friends of mine. They're having a Best of the Summer concert, 2 p.m. Sunday, September 15th. 2 p.m. Sunday, September 15th. It's at the Clovis Veterans Memorial Building in beautiful Old Town Clovis. It's absolutely free, so enjoy. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Our World War II veterans deserve a chance to see their memorial in Washington, D.C., and you can help send them there simply by renting a car. Between now and the end of October, visit any Enterprise Rent-A-Car location from Bakersfield in the south to Tulare, Visalia, Hanford, Selma, Fresno, Madera, Merced, all the way north to Sacramento. Tell them you heard this ad on Hometown Heroes, and Enterprise will donate 10% of your rental to Central Valley Honor Flight. Restrictions may apply. I'm sure you're familiar with Enterprise, but do you know why the largest car rental company in the U.S. is called Enterprise? The company's founder, Jack Taylor, was a decorated F-6F Hellcat pilot in World War II, flying off the deck of the Big E, the aircraft carrier USS Enterprise. Maybe I should get him on the show sometime and he can tell us how he earned the Distinguished Flying Cross. In the meantime, choose Enterprise for your next rental. Tell him you heard this advertisement on Hometown Heroes, and you'll be helping to send our World War II veterans on one more tour with honor.